Barkat led them in a wide, meandering circle away from the Kharib, back the way they had come, following game trails and crossing from one valley to the other until they arrived back above the Majuba camp. They did not approach within half a league of the stone and thatch hut, but camped instead behind the eastern watershed of the valley. They made no fire, but ate their food cold and slept wrapped in jackal-skin karosses. During the day, the men took turns to climb to the high ground with Jim's telescope and watch the camp at Majuba for Trier, Kaiser, and his troops to arrive.
"They cannot match my speed through these mountains," Barkat boasted. "They will not arrive until the day after tomorrow. But until then we must keep well hidden, for Trier has the eyes of a vulture and the instincts of a hyena."
Jim and Barkat built a hide of dead cripplewood branches and grass below the crest. Barkat examined it from all angles to make certain that it was invisible. When he was satisfied, he cautioned Jim and Zama not to use the telescope when the sun was at an angle to reflect from the lens. Jim set himself the first morning shift in the lookout hide. He had settled down comfortably and sunk softly into a pleasant reverie. He thought about his father's promise of wagons and supplies. With this help, his dreams of a journey to the ends of this vast land might become reality. He thought about the adventures he and Louisa would experience and the wonders they would find in that unexplored wilderness. He remembered the legends of riverbeds lined with gold nuggets, of the vast ivory herds, the deserts paved with glittering diamonds. Suddenly, he was startled to reality by the sound of loose pebble rattling down the hillside behind him. He reached instinctively for the pistol on his belt, but he could not risk a shot. Barkat had chided him none too gently about the musket shot that had brought down the eland and had led Trier to them.
"Trier would never have unravelled my spoor if you had not led him on, Samoya. That shot you fired confounded us."
"Forgive me, Barkat," Jim had apologized ironically, "and I know how you hate the taste of eland, Chugga. It would have been far better for us to starve." Now he dropped his hand from the pistol and reached for the handle of his knife. The blade was long and sharp, and he held it poised for a defensive stroke. But at that moment Louisa whispered softly outside the back wall of the hide, "Jim!" The alarm he had felt at her approach was replaced with a lift of pleasure at the sound of her voice.
"Come in quickly, Hedgehog. Don't show yourself."
She crawled in through the low entrance. There was barely room inside the lookout for both of them. They sat side by side, only inches between them. The silence was heavy and awkward. He broke it at last.
"Is everything well with the others?"
"They are sleeping."
She did not look at him, but it was impossible for her not to be intensely aware of him. He was so close, and he smelt of sweat, leather, and horses. He was so powerful and masculine that she felt confused and flustered. Dark memories mixed with new conflicting emotions, and she drew as far away from him as the space allowed. Immediately he did the same.
"Crowded in here," he said.
"Barkat built it to fit himself."
I didn't mean," she started. "I understand, Hedgehog," he said. "You explained to me once."
She shot him a glance from the corner of her eye, but saw with relief that his smile was unfeigned. She had learned over the past days that the name Hedgehog was not a rebuke or an insult, but friendly teasing.
"You said you once wanted one as a pet," she followed her thoughts.
"What?" He looked puzzled.
"A hedgehog. Why didn't you find yourself one?"
"Not easy. There aren't any in Africa," he grinned. "I've seen them in books. You're the first in the flesh. You don't mind when I call you that?" She thought about it and realized that now he was not even teasing her, but using it as an endearment.
"I did it first, but now I am accustomed to it," she said, and added softly, "Let me tell you that hedgehogs are sweet little creatures. No, I don't mind too much."
They were silent again, but it was no longer tense and awkward. After a while she made a peephole for herself in the grass of the front wall. He handed her the telescope and showed her how to focus it.
"You told me you were an orphan. Tell me about your parents," he said.
The question shocked her, and her temper flared. He had no right to ask that. She concentrated on her view through the telescope, but saw nothing. Then the anger subsided. She recognized a deep need to speak of her loss. She had never been able to before, not even to Elise, while she still trusted the old woman. "My father was a teacher, gentle and kind. He loved books and learning." Her voice was almost inaudible, but became stronger and surer as she remembered all the wonderful things about her mother and father, the love and kindness. He sat beside her quietly, asking a question as her words faltered, leading her on. It was as though he had lanced an abscess in her soul and let all the poison and the pain escape. She felt a growing trust in him, as though she could tell him everything and he would somehow understand. She seemed to lose track of time, until she was jerked into the present by a soft scratching sound at the back wall of the hide. Buckart's voice whispered a question. Jim replied, and Buckart went again as silently as he had come.
"What did he say?" she asked.
"He came to take over the watch, but I sent him away."
"I have been talking too much. What time is it?"
"Out here, time matters little. Go on with what you were saying. I like to listen to you." When she had told him everything she could remember of her parents, they went on to discuss other things, anything that came into her head, or wherever his questions led her. It was such a joy for her to talk freely to someone again. Now that she was at her ease and her defences were lowered, Jim found, to his delight, that she had a dry, quirky sense of humour. She could be funny and self-deprecating, sometimes sharply observant or wickedly ironic. Her English was excellent, far surpassing the quality of his Dutch, but her accent made things sound fresh, and her occasional lapses and solecisms were enchanting. The education she had received from her father had armed her with wide knowledge and understanding of a surprising range of subjects, and she had travelled to places that fascinated him. England was his ancestral and spiritual home, but he had never been there. And she described scenes and places he had heard of from his parents, but seen only in books. The hours sped away, and it was only when the long mountain shadows fell over the little hut that he saw the day was almost gone. Guiltily he realized that he had neglected his watch, had not so much as glanced out of his peephole for several hours. He leaned forward and peered down the mountainside. Louisa jumped with surprise as his hand fell on her shoulder. "They're here." His voice was sharp and urgent, but for a moment she did not understand. "Kayser and his men." Her pulse raced, and the fine pale hair on her forearms rose. She peered out with trepidation and saw movement in the valley far below. A column of horsemen was coming to the stream, but at this range it was not possible to identify the individual riders. Jim snatched the telescope out of her lap. He checked the angle of the sun with a glance, but the hut was already in shadow, so there was no danger of a reflection from the lens. He refocused it swiftly. "Pierre the bushman is leading them. I know that little swine of old. He's as cunning as a baboon and as dangerous as a wounded leopard. He and Buckart are mortal enemies. Buckart swears he killed his wife with wizard craft. He says Pierre charmed a mamba to sting her." He traversed the telescope and went on to describe what he was seeing. "Kayser is close behind Thea. He's riding his grey. That's another good horse. Kayser is a wealthy man, from the bribes he has taken and with what he's stolen from the VOC. He has one of the finest stables in Africa. He is not as soft as his big belly would suggest. They have arrived a full day sooner than Buckart expected them." Louise shrank a little closer to him. She felt the cold reptiles of fear slither down her back. She knew what would happen to her if she fell into Kayser's hands. Jim moved the glass on. "That's Captain Herminius Kutz following Kayser. Sweet Mother Mary, there's a naughty fellow for you. There are stories about Kutz that would make you blush or faint. That's Sergeant Uderman behind him. He's Kutz's boon companion, and they share the same tastes. What interests them mostly is gold and blood and what's under a skirt." "Jim Courtney, I'd thank you not to talk like that. Remember, I am a woman."
"Then I'll not have to explain it to you, will I, Hedgehog?" He grinned,
and she tried to look severe. But he ignored her disapproval and reeled off the names of the other troopers following Kayser. "Corporals Richter and Larisch are in the rear, bringing up the spare horses." He counted 10 in the little herd that followed the troop. "No wonder they've made such good time. With all those spares, they'll be able to push us hard." Then he snapped the telescope shut. "I'm going to explain what we have to do now. We have to lead Kayser away from the Kharib River, where my father will be waiting for us with wagons and supplies. I'm sorry, but it's going to mean running away like this for days and even weeks more. It'll mean much more hard living. No tents or time to build a shelter. Short rations once the eland meat runs out, unless we can kill more. But at this season, most of the game herds are down on the plains. With Kayser close behind us, we won't be able to hunt. It's not going to be easy." She hid her fears behind a smile and a cheerful tone. "After De Gondek of the Mew, it will seem like paradise." She rubbed the chain galls on her ankles. These injuries were healing. The scabs were peeling away, leaving fresh pink skin underneath. Bakat had concocted a balm of eland fat and wild herbs for her that was proving almost miraculously efficacious. "I thought about sending you off to the Kharib with Zama to protect you and take you to the rendezvous with my father, while Bakat and I led Kayser away. But when I discussed it with Bakat, we decided we could not take the risk. Kayser's bushman tracker is a magician. You and Zama could never elude him, even with Bakat playing all the tricks he knows. Tria would pick up your spoor at the place where we parted, and Kayser wants you almost as much as he wants me." His face darkened as he thought of her left without protection, to the mercy of Kayser and Kurtz and Odaman. "No, we will stay together." She was surprised at how relieved she felt that he would not leave her. They watched as Kayser's men searched the deserted hut, then remounted and set off up the valley, following the cold trail they had left. They disappeared into the mountains. "They will return soon enough," Jim predicted.